This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9. I'm Christine Wong and I'm joined by
Frida Liu.
Now, today we're talking about the issue of forced labor. So Malaysia has had a number of cases spotlighted recently where several industries have had their forced labor issues revealed. And Persatuan Sabahat Wanita Selangor Executive Director Irene Xavier claimed that Malaysia's economy could worsen if the government does not address the issues faced by migrant workers, including forced labour. So today we'll be talking about how we move away from our reliance on both forced and foreign labour. If you would like to get in touch with us and take part in the conversation, you can reach us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. So according to Irene, who is also Labour Law Reform Coalition Chairperson, products of forced labour will be rejected by developed nations, leading to the downfall of the country's economy. Here's a quote. When migrant workers are placed in working conditions where they work for low wage rates, they are forced to work long hours to reach their target of earning a good salary. Many things will happen not only to the migrants themselves, but to the country. One of them is that people in developed countries, such as the United States and the European Union, will refuse to buy goods that are made by forced labour. Malaysia is at the top of that list where many of our agricultural goods, such as palm oil, have been rejected by these countries. That affects our economy.
Right. So this was a statement taken from the launch of Manifesto Rakyat, a collective effort by CSO Platform for Reform and Gabungan Bertindak Malaysia to represent the diverse voices of Malaysians aspiring for a harmonious, equitable and progressive nation. The manifesto, dubbed a living document, identifies 27 policy areas categorized into three pillars. Among its demands include a comprehensive policy for migrant workers, calling for the report of the Special Independent Committee on Foreign Worker Management to be made public, to seize ad hoc policies and establish effective procedures under the Human Resources Ministry to manage migrant workers. The manifesto also demands a halt to the arbitrary arrest and detention of undocumented migrants, universal health care, the right to decent work in accordance with Malaysia's labour laws, and ratifying all basic convention on migrant work and workers by the International Labour Organization and United Nations.
Yes. And a while ago as well, Penang Deputy Chief Minister P. Ramasamy also claimed that Cabinet Ministers M. Saravanan and Zuraida Kamarudin, of course, this is before her sudden decision to resign as the Plantation Industries and Commodities Minister after about 9 months of administrating the ministry, he claimed that they were and are in denial over the presence of forced labour in Malaysia. At the time, Zuraida welcomed the decision by the U.S. Customs and Borders Protection to set up a working committee with the Malaysian government to address the issue of forced labour allegations. However, it should be noted that in doing so at the time, the minister went on the defensive, saying that Malaysian industries had not been treated fairly. Here's a quote. It's sad to realise that our two ministers are in denial of the presence of forced labour. Both talk happily about establishing joint committees with the US CBP to get around the allegations of a widespread use of forced labour in industries that use cheap and malleable labour force. They think that the establishment of joint committees with the US BCP or CBP, my apologies, might be able to address these quote-unquote wild and unsubstantiated allegations of forced labour.
So he said the ministers must accept and acknowledge that there is a widespread use of forced labour in the country, especially in plantations and low-skills production establishments. Here's another quote. Malaysia might be guided by the ILO considerations on forced labour, but this alone is not enough to suggest the absence of forced labour in the country. The ministers might have pleasant meetings with the US authorities in relation to use of forced labour in Malaysia, but the fact that the products of some Malaysian companies were barred from entry into the US might provide some indication of the use of forced labour. They cannot keep on misleading the Malaysian public as though allegations about forced labour are untrue. In response, at the time, Zuraida had called the establishment of the committee a move in the right direction, saying the issue had unfairly plagued local industries, in particular palm oil and rubber. She said, as I have mentioned before, quote, most of the claims of forced labour made by NGOs and other interest groups were not verified by the US authorities, which then resulted in Malaysian palm oil and palm oil products being banned, and this is grossly unfair to our local industry.
Yes, but we have already felt the pinch, right? The US CBP has indeed reacted in the past to forced labour allegations against companies such as Top Glove by issuing a withhold release order. The International Trade and Ministry Industry revealed in March this year that the estimated loss incurred by Top Glove during the period of the WRO imposed by the US CBP was 3.6 billion ringgit. Back, during the pandemic as well. On July 15, 2020, the USCBP issued a WRO on Top Glove on allegations of forced labor practices in the production process, including employee debt bondage, excessive overtime, violation of environmental conditions, workplace and accommodation facilities, and detention of identification documents. However, the restriction was lifted in September last year after the CBP was satisfied with the evidence and actions taken by Top Glove, including the payment of compensation to employees and improving workplace facilities and accommodation for employees, according to MITI. And in 2020 as well, the USCBP had also barred Malaysian products of Sime Darby Plantation, obviously the world's biggest palm oil planter by land size, citing reasonable suspicion of the use of forced labor. That allowed the authorities at the time to detain goods at ports.
So Ramasamy called on the two ministers to clarify if the issue of US protectionism might also be a factor. He said another reason why the US is barring Malaysian products might have to do with the US seeking to protect its domestic industries from unfair competition with products from Malaysia produced cheaply on the basis of subdued labor. The U.S. might not be opposed to implications of this as posing unfair competition to their products. So he said, I wonder whether our gung-ho minister raised the issue of the U.S. protectionist policies or whether they were so overwhelmed with the meetings. American officials said they lacked the dignity to adopt a critical perspective on forced labor. Ramasamy claimed that forced labor is something endemic to the Malaysian economy and cannot be eliminated by denying its presence. Quote, it is a problem that needs to be sorted out in the long run by attracting high-end investments and a high degree of industrialization by reliance on human talents and skills. He said our reliance on foreign workers is a pathway to use of forced labor. They'll be squeezed against their will to attract surplus value in the form of greater profits.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the larger businesses and industries are not the only corporations uber-reliant on foreign workers. National Secretary General for the SME Association of Malaysia, Chin Chee Siong, said that manpower shortages may affect the ability of SMEs to ramp up their services. Chin said a large number of foreign workers have gone back to their countries and SMEs have been struggling to fulfill orders due to the lack of foreign labor. Most locals are not keen to take up the 3D, dirty, dangerous and difficult jobs. Hence, we are hoping for the foreign workers to come back as soon as possible. Meanwhile, Sunway University Professor of Economics, Dr. Ya Kim Leng, proposed that the government facilitate the intake of foreign workers promptly. He noted economic recovery will be stronger because of the support from the increasing production and productivity of SMEs that are affected by the labour shortage.
So with all of this in mind, co-founder Malaysian HR Forum and Social Compliance Malaysia Chapter, Arul Kumar Singaravelu, suggested a switch in workday patterns from the current two-shift model to a three-shift model could be one of the steps that manufacturers can take to eliminate forced labour practices. This would attract more local workers while decreasing their reliance on foreign labour. Measures like this make sense given the recent changes to the minimum wage, the upcoming changes to the Employment Act 1955 and the government's plans to introduce tiered foreign workers levy. Companies often violate the provisions of the Employment Act 1955 in areas such as rest day provision, which requires a minimum of 30 hours rest and in some cases in the calculation of overtime. Adopting a three-shift pattern, for example, could be a win-win solution for employers who wish to reduce overtime costs and mitigate the risk of going against labour laws and social compliance in local governments. And further, the practice of scheduled overtime or fixed overtime in a 12-hour shift pattern may not be acceptable by international labour standards. So I just, you know, I guess before we continue, I was just looking at this. And it's true, right? I mean, when you look at certain things and you look at where is it made in, it does have that, you know, if you think of certain countries, or the perception of certain countries known to have child labour, for example, then like, do I want to buy this product, right?
Yeah, and also I think as the conversation around migrant workers and human rights essentially is increasing, we stand to risk a lot of our business, our international business, just by reputation alone, right? That's the whole problem. I mean, regardless of however productive we are, it's not going to be useful if those products are then rejected because of human rights issues, right? So in order to find out more about all of this, we will be speaking to Arul Kumar after the break to explain more about the issue of forced labour in Malaysia and the potential solutions for the future. So do stay tuned for that. In the meantime, though, if you'd like to get in touch and join in the conversation, we're on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and on Twitter at BFM Radio. For now, here's Breakdown by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Beating fickle mindsets. BFM 89.9,
The Business Station.
You are listening to Enterprise Biz Bites. I'm Christine Wong, and with me in the studio is
Frida Liu.
Today we're talking about the issue of forced labor, especially as it pertains to foreign labor as well. And we talked a bit about it before the break, basically how it's a problem. That's been endemic in Malaysia for a long time. And to expand upon this point, we do have on the line the co-founder of Malaysia HR Forum and Social Compliance in Malaysia chapter, Arul Kumar Singaravelu. But before we talk to him, if you would like to talk to us and chime in on the subject, we are on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We're also on Twitter at BFM Radio. Now, Arul Kumar, first of all, in general, what are your thoughts on Malaysia's general reliance on foreign labour in the first place?
In my view, Malaysia has been over-reliant on foreign workers, you know, for the longest time we have known. Ever since Malaysia started its industrialization journey back then, we know that Malaysians prefer not to get themselves involved in difficult, demanding jobs. And it's no longer an unknown secret. It is a known secret today. What organizations have been doing is to continue to rely on foreign workers without re-examining their fundamentals, their operational structure, and so on. So I believe the time has come for Malaysia to start looking back into their operational needs, their long-term plans, and start looking into those aspects of operations that relates to human labour needs.
Arul, could you share some light on the extent of the issue of forced labour here in Malaysia, especially as it pertains to, you know, foreign workers?
Well, I think all of us know that the forced labour issue, it's a big topic today. It's in the papers daily. The government is looking into it seriously. And we know that quite a number of Malaysian organisations have been put on the withhold release order list by the USCBP. Withhold release order list means these companies are no longer allowed to export into the US due to the prevalence of forced labor practices in their organization. So this is just one industry, which is the glove. And of course, we also know that the plantations industry were also targeted, and today they're also affected. So it is becoming more known today. The topic of the forced labor is becoming widespread. So I believe most employers today, including the government, the employers, the other stakeholders, are aware, but I think more needs to be done.
Speaking of the government, what are the governmental policies in place designed to protect employees from issues like forced labor?
I think first I would like to recall the National Action Plan on Forced Labor that the government launched towards the end of last year. So this action plan is intended to ensure that Malaysia eradicates forced labor practices by year 2025. So it's a grand ambitious plan that the Ministry of Human Resources have put in place to guide Malaysian employers and other key stakeholders on approaches, methods, and so on to ensure and to prevent forced labor practices. So that's number one. And just a couple of weeks ago, the amendment to the Malaysian Employment Act 1955 was also, was also gazetted. And a couple of changes in this act also covers foreign workers' practices. For example, the introduction of the forced labor provision. So any organization that employs a person against their will can be prosecuted as far as the Employment Act is concerned. So these are the two approaches the government has taken. And the third one that I would say is the creation of awareness for Malaysian stakeholders, be it organizations, be it NGOs, be it the academia, is to create this awareness for companies, for these stakeholders, to understand what are forced labour and so on. So I think government has also organised a couple of initiatives, seminars and symposiums. They've also formed the technical committee within the Ministry of Human Resource itself to look into programmes and interventions towards this extent.
Do you have any further insight into which industries are more susceptible to this kind of behaviour?
Well, I think, we can't just pinpoint, okay, only one particular industry. As long as an organization or a company, typically this will be manufacturing sector or services sector, plantation sector, as long as the organization or the company uses forced labor in their work, for example, you know, using the forced labor in manufacturing lines, or sorry, foreign workers in manufacturing lines, or foreign workers to harvest their plantation. So all these industries, it does not matter. As long as the industry uses foreign workers, I think they've got to be mindful that these foreign workers could be prone or could be subjected to forced labor. So we know that the glove industry was, you know, had gone through this journey. The plantation industry is going through this journey. The electronics industry went through this journey many years ago, almost about 10, 12 years ago. And the EMS sector, and I think sectors like the furniture sector, the ceramic sector, they need to start looking into this topic as well.
Hmm. So right now, one of the issues with forced labor also comes from our current labor delegation approach, let's say, with workers taking one of two, you know, 8 to 12 hour shifts per day. So where does this current two shift approach even originate from?
Well, I think this has been there for a longest time that we have known. Once upon a time, you know, organizations, you know, work on an 8 hour basis. Our Malaysian employment law, you know, have this approach or the concept of 48 hours, basic hours. So 48 hours of basic divided into 6 days is 8 hours per day. So that's where the idea or the notion of 8 hours per day came from. But as companies go into a 24-hour shift pattern, they will need more workers to cover the shift rotation. Therefore, the 8 hours got expanded to 12 hours, right? So in order to operate a 24-hour manufacturing facility, they will have two crew, crew A, crew B. So crew A will work 12 hours, they clock out, crew B will come in another 12 hours. So that's where this two shift, you know, 24 hours approach came from.
Right. You know, Arul, is forced labour more of an issue for foreign labourers, or does it also affect locals as well? And to why? And to what extent? Why or why not?
So forced labour, it's not necessarily on foreign workers alone. Even local workers can be affected. So I think recently there was a news about a plantation in Negeri Sembilan where a local employee, a local Malaysian, you know, claimed to have been a victim of forced labour. So forced labour affects anyone. It can be any, as long as you're a human being, you are subjected to forced labour. You're not, your movement is restricted. Your identity documents are taken away. If your wages are not paid for work done, if you're subjected to abuse, it can be sexual harassment, it can be physical abuse, your movement is contained and you're asked to do things that you don't enjoy doing or you don't voluntarily do. That is forced labour. So it affects any human being if they're put into such a situation.
Right. Just hang on the line for us, Arul Kumar, as we do have to take a short break for some messages. If you would like to get in touch with us about this topic, we are on Twitter at BFM Radio. We're also reachable on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 if you'd like to send us something a bit more long form. Of course, we do have co-founder of Malaysia HR Forum and Social Compliance Malaysia Chapter, Arul Kumar Singaravelu, on the line with us to talk about forced labour. But for now, here is Funk No. 49 by James Gang here on BFM 89.9.
Behold freedom, Malaysia. BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Christine Wong and I'm joined in the studio by
Frida Liu.
Today we're talking about the issue of forced labour in Malaysia and the potential solutions for the future. If you'd like to get in touch with us about this topic, we're on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We're also on Twitter at BFM Radio. On the line with us, we have co-founder of Malaysia HR Forum and Social Compliance Malaysia Chapter, Arul Kumar Singaravelu, and we're talking about foreign labour and forced labour as well. So Arul, thanks for staying on the line with us. What should the consequences be, if any, for companies that violate policies like the aforementioned Employment Act 1955?
Okay, the good news is Employment Act clearly specifies, you know, either it's a fine or a jail term if they're convicted, depending on the provision that companies did not follow. And so that is just two. So the fines and as well as jail term. But recently, the government, when they amended the Employment Act, they have enhanced the fines. For example, from 10,000 previously, it is now 50,000. And there are some cases where it is 100,000. So the enhancement of these penalties should be an eye-opener to organizations to ensure that they follow the rules, follow what the provisions of the Act says. And, you know, my favorite tagline that I always repeat time and again, if you think compliance is expensive, try non-compliance.
Okay. All right. Now, realistically, do companies who have been found guilty of this nature of malpractice actually suffer the consequences?
Well, I think there's no surprise again. Now, if you look back at what has happened to the glove industry, ever since 2020, as well as the plantation industry, and most recently the EMS industry. So these companies, the moment if they are accused of forced labor practices, the customers, for example, in the case of US, puts a sanction on them. And the moment sanction is put on them, they lose business. So we have seen Dyson pull out from one of their local subcon manufacturer. They've pulled out the businesses from them. And I think they are badly affected. And then we have got the glove industry. When WRO is put on them, they could not export into the US. Typically it's US. So US normally champions this in a bigger fashion manner. So once the WRO is put on them, they cannot produce into US. They cannot submit their product or send their product into the United States. Now, that affects the operations of the company as regards to their cash flow, to their production, employee morale, and so on. So I think we all know the list of companies that were sanctioned by United States Customs and Border Protection. So we had got the plantation players, two of them, and the glove industry, six of them. Out of the six, two, they managed to revoke the WRO, and today they're back into business, sending their product into US. But four others are still working towards this journey to get the WRO lifted.
Right, okay. So at least there is some sort of repercussions for this kind of activity. Now, moving forward, what could the solutions be for companies to move away from the reliance on foreign labor?
Well, I think there's a lot that organizations can do today. Let me just cover a couple of topics. Number one, I think there's got to be a fundamental and structural changes to their operational systematics. So for the longest time, companies do not want to invest in automation. Why? Because automation is costly. It takes many years for the organization or the company to achieve the return of investment. So the easier approach, the quick fix, hire foreign workers or even locals at times. Hire them and pay them low. Now, so automation and or digitalization, whatever you call it, as long as you reduce the reliance of foreign workers to operate your processes, that will be number one, the first step to do. The second step to do is to enhance wages. Now, we know that foreign workers, they wouldn't mind coming and doing a job for a lower salary. But locals do not work in that manner. Local wants quality of life today. They want to ensure that they earn enough and they also see some balance to their work-life approach. And of course, today we have the minimum wage increase from 1,002, what was before, to 1,005. So this is probably one step. But is 1,005 enough for locals? There are organizations that pays way above the minimum wage, which is a good practice. But of course, it's also costly for a company to pay beyond 1,005. But this could be an approach for organizations to take. So my advice to companies at times is when we do our costing, now when we look at direct costs, local versus foreign, foreigners may be expensive. If you look at direct costs, locals are cheaper. Why? Because there's a cost of recruitment that companies need to pay. There's a cost of hostel, levies, and so on. But when we look at the indirect costs, foreigners are cheaper because foreigners, the attrition rate is low. They are able to work shift. They are able to work overtime. They are prepared to work on weekends and so on. Whereas locals, they want that work-life balance. So companies need to really examine in the long-term perspective, should I continue relying on foreign workers? Now, I don't think we can eliminate foreign workers totally, but I think we need to start taking steps to reduce the reliance. For all we know, if these steps were to be taken, perhaps, in a couple of years down the road, the ratio of local and foreign in any organization could be in a way that locals are higher, foreigners are lesser. Not today, for example, in the glove industry, foreigners are much more than locals. So I think before we look at removing foreign workers or completely stop reliance on foreign workers, is to start looking at steps to reduce the reliance at the first stage. Then as we take this journey, we will see what happens down the road. Now, there could also be possibility the foreign workers may not want to come to Malaysia after all, after a couple of years. Let's assume one of these countries that exports their labor into Malaysia. If their economy expands, their social economy becomes better, there may not be reason for their citizens to come to Malaysia to work. I'd rather just stay put in my own home country because I think the salaries are better. There are much more organizations operating here. fixed FDI is coming in. So why do I want to go to Malaysia, for example, and earn 1,500 ringgit when I can earn slightly lesser? You know, it's not 1,500, slightly lesser, but at least I'm here with my family and friends.
Right. Yeah, it's about that, right? And okay, also, and how about solutions for the practice of forced labour?
Yep. So I think this goes back to the earlier question that you asked me about the two shift pattern. Now, we all know, because as I consult quite a number of organizations, you know, how to restructure their workforce, you know, how to look at employee retention, how do we reduce reliance on foreign workers. Now, locals generally, I can't paint them with a broad brush, but locals generally do not want to work 12 hours. That is why organizations, you know, particularly the manufacturing players, plantation players, the agriculture players, the construction players, you know, they are not able to attract locals in big numbers. They are able to get them, but they are not able to retain them. So it's, you know, people come, people go. Now, why does this happen? Simply because locals, generally, they are not prepared to work 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. It's too long of a work, right? So one way forward for organization is, how, you know, as we think, how can I attract locals in bigger number? How can I retain them? Is to look at a shorter work week. It can be 8 hours per day, 6 days a week, which goes, maybe now we can't use 8 hours and six, because the Employment Act, the total work hours now has been reduced from 48 to 45, right? So it could be 6 days a week, 7.5 hours per day, or 5 days work, you know, and you finish it within 45 hours. But of course, to do this, those companies in a 24-hour shift pattern or 24/7 manufacturing or even operations, they will need to hire an additional crew. So you have got, you know, crew A, crew B, each one working 12 hours, making it 24. Now, the moment if they work only 7.5, we then need to bring in the third crew. So it's 8 hours. Now, perhaps this is what local needs. This is what local workers prefer. And I also see the trend of local employees. They may take up this work pattern. I work 8 hours and then I do whatever I want after that. Now, with the rise of gig economy, sometimes these workers, they are quite intelligent. They will be able to calculate. If I were to work additional 4 hours of overtime, this is what I earn. Now, if these 4 hours, if I were to go and do, you know, any gig job, I could be a Grab driver, or I could sell burgers, or I could do some other activities, and I can earn more than these 4 hours. So what may happen is these workers, they will take the full-time job as a safety net for me to pay my, you know, to ensure my basic needs are met, and I do some other job to earn, to supplement my income. So I think this is a win-win situation. Now, there could be some employees who prefer to work 12 hours. That's good. I mean, then it solves your need. But those of them who do not want to work 12 hours, at least you have an option for them. You know, you can either choose a 12-hour work or an 8-hour work. So having this option may help to attract more locals, may help to improve retention and possibly employees' morale.
All right. Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for all of those insights. That was co-founder of Malaysia HR Forum and Social Compliance Malaysia Chapter, Arul Kumar Singaravelu, on the line with us. And that brings us just about to the end of our show. Again, if you want to get in touch with us, though, you can, of course, reach us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and Twitter at BFM Radio as well. We'll, of course, be back same time, same place here tomorrow. Clearly, I need to get some coffee. We'll be back tomorrow is what I'm trying to say. But coming up shortly after the 1 p.m. news bulletin, GSK will split into two new global companies in 2022, which will be GSK and Haleon. What does this spin-off mean for Malaysia and the healthcare industry? The Breakfast Grill spoke to Dr. Jonathan Pan, Vice President and GM of Malaysia and Brunei at GSK, about their top-selling drugs, their role in the COVID-19 pandemic, and if Malaysia could ever become a vaccine manufacturing hub. That's all coming up on the Breakfast Grill Replay at 1 p.m. On behalf of myself and Frida Liu, this has been Enterprise Biz Bytes, and here is Living in the Heart of Love by Rolling Stones, followed by The Steps by Haim, here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.